keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to Managing Technology the Right Way with your host, Sung Jo Gall, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you don't have time for college, let the college come to you via the Internet. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Now showing you how to manage technology the right way, here's Sung Jo Gall.
Good morning, folks, and welcome to the show. It needs careful planning and flawless execution to make technology work for us. But how many times do we succeed? On this show, we invite business leaders and subject matter experts with extensive experience in technology management. The intent here is to learn from their experience and discuss better ways to manage technology. To learn more about the show, please visit talkshow.avval.com. That is talkshow.avval.com. Today's topic is building a lean IT organization. Our guest for today's show is Jim Hinkamp. Jim is the Vice President and CIO for Shark Inc., a global prepress house with customers including Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Microsoft, Kellogg's, and Coca-Cola. Additionally, he is also the President of Interchange Digital, a digital asset management solutions company. Interchange Digital is a wholly owned subsidiary of Shark Inc. After joining as CIO in February 2002, Jim led the effort to significantly reduce IT support costs by building a strong in-house team of experienced IT resources and centralizing critical IT processes. With over 20 years of IT industry experience, Jim led large software implementation efforts and held senior management positions with Deloitte Consulting and the Revere Group. Good morning, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good morning.
How's business in 2004?
2004 has been real strong. We've been going very well. Our clients have been wanting to do new promotions and change their activities a lot, so things are going very well for us.
Great. You've worked with many industries over your career. How is prepress industry any different?
You know, I've worked at a lot of large companies across a lot of industries, worked with finance and retail, manufacturing, insurance, and when I did consulting, I was doing it for a lot of ERP implementations, and in fact grew a division from a ground floor to over 100 consultants. So I know industry from both sides, being as on the consulting side as well as on the inside of companies. And I tell you, this is the toughest company I've had in understanding the terminology and how they work. At most places I've been a very transactional type business, and you can centralize a lot of things. But really what Shark manufactures is such, they're large digital output files that we send to printers. And they're very large files, from 5 meg to 200 meg. So we end up having to have at each of our locations, they have their own MIDI data centers, and it's not a very transaction-oriented business. As well as they have a very large concentration of Macintoshes here. That's really, if you go into any of our facilities, you'll see a lot of people just sitting rows and rows of Macs, whereas we have Windows-type servers at corporate. It's very different. So managing Macintoshes is definitely a large difference. And even the people who are working in our facilities, they're more like tradesmen as they're developing, a craftsmen of making these the output that we're doing for all of our clients. You know, think of a lot more like the advertising company, people sitting behind Mac creating what the packages will look like. And finally, Shark has really grown a lot by acquisition over time. And they continue down this path. We have a lot of different companies, and each one was left alone in the beginning. So we have a lot of differences between each of the different locations, which part of my job is to try and slowly but surely bring them together.
So when we talk about your company's work, it's when you say it's like processing of data files and basically making it ready for the printers. While that is the work done which is primarily for the regular employee who's basically an artist or somebody who's a printing expert. From the IT standpoint, what kind of systems and applications do you have which have to support this?
Well, we have here at corporate, we'll have the normal financial systems, ERPs, and things like that. Out in the divisions, they actually, in the locations, they'll actually have mostly either Adobe-type products, the Photoshop, and products like that that they're working on. Again, very high-end Macintoshes to try to make it so that when you go into the, you know, if you think of when you go into the grocery store and you see boxes of Clairol hair coloring on the shelf, you've got to be sure that those colors are exactly perfect and they can print out exactly perfect. For Coca-Cola, that the red that you see on a can and the carton is worldwide, globally, that red has to be there. So our people are sitting in front of the Macs and they have the Macintosh applications. And then when they're storing those files, those very large files, even over a 100 megabit infrastructure, they still can take a while. So we need to be sure that we can store those files off and that from a disaster recovery standpoint, we have places where we can bring those files back from. So we can't store the stuff here at corporate centrally because we need a huge bandwidth just to take care of that. So from an IT side, it's much more of how can we support the 20-plus data centers that we really have running with a fairly they're mostly IT staff who are out in our locations. They really have come up from being Mac operators and moved up technically, so they don't have strict IT backgrounds, but they've learned it more on the job.
Now, what do you do for managing your workflow? In the sense of vendor.
For managing the workflow, we've actually built our own internal tool which resides at each of our locations. They each have their own workflow system which we custom built and that runs out in the location so that because really what we end up doing, what our people end up doing is that almost every job is a custom job. So we couldn't use off-the-shelf order entry systems to capture all the information that's required for each job that they do. So we had to end up building it ourselves. So we have a custom-built workflow that moves it from, you know, our customer service reps who make sure they've got all the information to the different people, through our quality control people, and finally back to our billing area where then it comes and gets sent up to where the information would get sent to our central service for billing and the like.
So your workflow system is also decentralized. You know, they have one installation per site.
Correct. And the reason we did that was because we were concerned about if we ever had any interruptions in service, we wanted our plants to be able to continue operating. If you think of a normal manufacturing plant where they've got cars running down the line, they can pretty much keep going if they, you know, their central server goes down because they know it's supposed to build. With us, often the information we need to get from the workflow part is directly out of the system. So if there was a, you know, heaven forbid the backhoe comes and digs up the line to the internet, we don't want our location to have to be down. So we really have decided to decentralize our workflow, at least for now, and decided it wasn't costly enough to put in all sorts of duplicate bandwidth to back that up. So it was easier to allow the decentralized workflow systems and then merge the information on a nightly basis.
So this is basically to avoid single point of failure?
Correct, correct. Plus, from a development standpoint, the development tools which they had used prior to my coming were fairly inexpensive tools which they could allow to build quickly the system and it matched what their needs were. And so they didn't have to put in huge infrastructures to do this. It was a fairly inexpensive path to go down.
And you are carrying that torch forward anyways. Are you just keeping the same systems?
Yes. We keep looking at are there parts that we can bring back centralized in that. Mm-hmm. Certainly there are systems that we have looked at. Can we phase those out? Can we sunset those and bring in other systems which will be more appropriate, because one of the things we have found that some of our centralized systems for our invoicing, et cetera, they really don't do well of merging information across locations, so that we have to write a lot of very tough reports in order to get the information of, we have clients who maybe do work at different locations. To be able to report on that is not so easy. So we're definitely looking at replacing some of our systems, and we'll continue that as time goes on.
Yeah, and actually that was my follow-up question, whether how were you trying to mine the data, because that's definitely the next thing which the president and the other team of the management team would be looking for, to have a dashboard where they say, okay, what's going on in each location and how we are aggregating the whole information.
Yes, we're definitely pulling the information all centrally, and certainly it goes into our financial systems here. But it has been tough as we've become more and more global over time, that to actually get good information. You know, it started out where each location basically served independent clients when we first were purchasing them. But now as time goes on, there's more and more shared clients across them. So to get the complete view of a client across locations becoming more and more important to us. So we're definitely moving in that direction.
So you mentioned about, like, you know, use of Macs. I know people who use them are totally passionate about them, but at the same time, there are some, as I understand, you know, it is almost like a poor little kid sitting in the corner and not being given that much of support as it deserves over the years. So how are you dealing with that challenge? What kind of challenges, or for that matter, what advantages or disadvantages do you feel or you have in terms of having such a large percentage of Macs in your organization?
Yeah, one of the things certainly is that the Mac people certainly like to point out to me consistently is that they certainly don't get their share of viruses and worms and things like that. That's changing a little now that Macintosh is going towards with the OS X and the Unix, the Linux derivative there. You know, from an ease of use, they certainly, everybody tells me that, you know, from their point of view, they're certainly a lot easier to use. So from a learning curve and things like that, it's easier to get people up and faster to use them. I would say my issues are, the bigger issues come when we try and look at any central software that we try and use so often. I would say, you know, 90% of it out there, as soon as I bring up the fact that, well, it doesn't work on a Mac, they either say no or they say yes, and they say yes because it's web-based. But it's surprising is that just because software is web-based doesn't necessarily mean it works on a Mac, which is really surprising to a lot of people. I tell companies that that's the easiest way actually for me to get rid of salespeople on the phone is I just tell them, do you work on the Mac? And when they say no, I say, okay, then we're done. But even though it can be a browser-based, internet-based software system, it still doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily able to work easily. And oftentimes, because of what's being loaded on the machine, there are a lot of issues still.
All right.
So, you know, Macs do certainly help me some, but on the other hand, they definitely can cause issues in some areas.
Great. Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and then let's talk about, you know, the way Jim has to deal with any situation where there's a new initiative that he would want to take on, and there's a situation where there's more capital infusion required. How would he go about going in front of the management for this proposal, and what kind of due diligence is performed to make sure that that particular initiative is actually going to create value. So let's discuss about that more in detail. We'll be right back after these messages, so please stay tuned.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.abbal.com today. Avval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Evol can help your company, visit www.evol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com on the SurfNet Radio Network. Brought to you by SurfNet Media Group, publicly traded under the symbol SFNM. BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Tune in and join the discussion of the Entrepreneurs Roundtable with Margaret Combs every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. The Entrepreneurs Roundtable is the only true forum where you can call in and get answers to your most pressing business questions, as well as learn what you can do to make your company more profitable. From business life cycles to everyday commerce issues, you, the entrepreneur, cannot afford to miss this show. So pull up a chair and join the Entrepreneurs Roundtable with Margaret Combs every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Talk radio with a business perspective. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
If you're ready for a highly interactive show dealing with current market trends and strategies, listen to the In Motion Marketing Show with Lamore Chapman, heard every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. The In Motion Marketing Show focuses on today's business climate and gives you the chance to get new and exciting ideas from marketing experts from different industries. Tune in, call in, and listen to the In Motion Marketing Show with Lamore Chapman every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is building a lean IT organization. Our guest for today's show is Jim Hainkamp. Jim is the Vice President and Chief Information Officer for Shark, Inc., a global prepress house with customers including Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Microsoft, Kellogg's, and Coca-Cola. Additionally, he is also the president of Interchange Digital, a digital asset management solutions company. Interchange Digital is a wholly owned subsidiary of Shark, Inc. Before the break, I just picked up a question which we were supposed to discuss after the break was a situation where the business seems highly competitive, this Shark's business, and therefore the management must be feeling the pinch every time the need is there for capital infusion, and that is that too pertaining to IT. So what's the due diligence process that is taken on, Jim, and before basically presenting the funding proposal, and how does your management process it?
Yeah, I think like most companies, management is very skeptical when you present your ROI to them that they're ever going to get the return on. They've heard so many times in the past of the huge ROIs that they're going to get that don't ever seem to come to pass, or they're buried. So I'd say my management, like most companies, is often skeptical when I bring proposals to them with here's how to do it and here's what we think is going to happen. We do have a formal process called a CapEx project for all capital expenditures, and it's being very regulated. We have, since we are a publicly held company, the whole Sarbanes-Oxley thing has certainly played into everything now, and lots of policies and procedures about anything financial. So we need to fill out the forms and take that too. But I would say even before I get to filling out the forms, the way I try and go about things, try and make sure that I pre-sell everything. So I will be sure to have discussions with management about what I'm doing and why I'm doing it, so that by the time I get to the actual filling out the form process, I know if it's a go or no-go pretty well before it. And even if there are other people who I know I need to get on my side, that I'll spend time with them to help to be sure that they understand what the advantages are going to be. Because oftentimes when you're going through this, it's there are some projects like when you put in a new phone system or you know, replacing systems which have real hard ROIs, but then other ones are much softer. Certainly anytime you begin to talk about customer service and making clients more, be more responsive to your clients and making clients, you know, happier, it gets very fuzzy about the real ROI there. And even if you're going to save, you know, if you're going to save 5 or 10 minutes a day for each person, and yeah, that all adds up to a good ROI, but you're not really having a hard ROI of, you know, getting rid of people. So that gets very tough, and therefore you really need to have those, to my point of view, you really need to have those side conversations to be sure that you've answered all of their questions, where you can do it in private so that then when they all get together to discuss it, to me, it's a foregone conclusion and everybody's in agreement, and they can even, if there's one person who's in disagreement, often the other people who have sold into it will then help them convince them. So I'm not the only person trying to convince our executive management team that it's a good decision.
So given that it's a pre-press house, I'm not sure what is the level of IT savvy that your management team carries, and what is the level, first of all, that would be a good thing to know, and secondly, if at all it is not as much, then that ignorance about the fact that, you know, these things could actually make a difference because you have the foresight, you've been there in the trenches, so you know what works and what doesn't.
I would say, you know, certainly that was one of the things of why they brought me in, was that they didn't have that much technical savvy quite honestly, they had some projects they had tried to do which didn't work out very well and cost them a lot of money prior to my coming in. So what they really trust me a lot, and I would say that's one of the things is that I makes my job a lot easier, and that I do have their trust in that I'm not going to spend their money in ways that is going to go down the drain, that is going to be lost. So that does make it a lot easier for me to sell. Their technical savvy is not real strong. They understand, actually, it's very strong on the pre-press side, since they do have a lot of, it's a pretty technical what they're doing of generating the files, et cetera, and how that's all done and sent to the printers and things like that. They're very strong there, but when it comes to infrastructurally, when it comes to the internet and all those types of things, that certainly is not something where they focused. So they really rely on me and have a pretty strong trust in me that I'm not going to do things which are extravagant, and I look after their own dollars as if they were my own. I think that's probably the biggest thing that helps, is when I've gone through it, you know, I really lay it out as if they were my dollars, it was my company and how I'm spending it, and therefore they do have a fairly large amount of trust in that what I'm doing is looking after their dollars too.
Now, while we know that they do not need to learn about any and every aspect of IT, but do you think a little bit of education, like on a continuous basis for the management, that this is what the tangible and intangible benefits are for a particular technology, just at a very, very executive brief level, do you think something like that would help organizations like yours to prepare your management so that when you come back with a proposal, they just do not look like deer in headlights? They do definitely have some idea about what's going on, and then they are able to very well perceive where you're coming from.
Absolutely, and that's really what a lot of my pre-selling is about. Is really, when I call it pre-selling, it's really pre-educating, I guess I would say, is where I'm explaining to them, here is how it works, here is the alternatives, here is why this is the best way. It may not be the least expensive, but here is why in the long term, if we take a matter of where we're at today and where we're trying to get to, management has a 2020 global vision of where they're trying to get to in the year 2020 and an expansion of 20% a year. And so they understand that they need a certain infrastructure in place to be able to grow that to that level by 2020 and to do it in the least expensive manner. So there has to be some infrastructural costs that need to go in to be able to, as we do acquisitions, as we do internal growth, that we'll be able to do that in the least expensive way possible and to be able to gain efficiencies. So when I do my pre-education, before I bring a major project to them. We'll talk through a lot of that, and a lot of it is education, of helping them understand, here is where we're at today, here's what you tell me you want to do in the future. And I think that's an important part of a CIO's job, is to be sure to understand what management's, where they're trying to go, so that when you understand where they're trying to go, you can help lead them, you can help get out in front of them. Part of my job, I certainly view as understanding where they want to be, so that by the time they get there, I can react in a timely manner, versus if I just start trying to react when they say they want something, there's no way I'm going to be able to accomplish what they want. So part of my job is to a little bit of try and read the tea leaves of understanding, this is what they say, what do they need to be when they get there? They want to become more global, they want to become more integrated globally, and things like that. So what pieces do we need to put in place to be sure that we're able to handle that?
Now, like any progressive business, your organization must also be focusing on its core competency while trying to outsource the non-core functions, including some facets of IT. However, either companies do not fully exploit this strategy or they overdo it. So what's your company's status in this regard?
We don't outsource too much as far as the actually hosting. There's a couple reasons for that. One is a lot of places do not have the ability to support Macintoshes or understand them. It's even a real struggle for us and for my help desk. But with that lack of knowledge at many places which we'd outsource different running different functions to, it would really make it difficult. And emails, even things like email, they're so important, as well as integration of between systems. So there are some things, there are a few applications which we've outsourced, but not a whole lot. As well as with my other hat on, with my interchange hat on, we do host an ASP for many of our large clients, including many which are Fortune 500 clients. We run the software for them. So from an economies of scale, by using the ASP as well as with our own infrastructure, we are able to stay as less costly as possible and to really give value back to the company by hosting it ourselves. We have the knowledge, and we're able to do things, therefore, as least costly as possible. Even when I go about things like hiring consultants, since I was a lot on the consultant side, I know that when I used to try and do it, certainly wanting large teams to come in, rather the way I do it here is I go out and find the most expert person I can find, have them come in to train my team as we're going through projects, and then help them to help us to get up to speed, to be able to do it, and then the consultant goes away, so that it's a, I don't mind spending, you know, good money on a really high expert who can help train my people, with the idea, though, that they're going to go away versus having a team of people to come in and do that. So even when we outsource to consultants, it's usually short-term assignments. The people come in, they're here to assist us, train us, and then go away.
Well, that's great. And, you know, in fact, I understand that coming from a consulting background, you're pretty dangerous for other consultants. Like, you know, if they try to play a prank on you or try to take you for a ride.
So yeah, definitely. I definitely call them on that a lot. Okay, guys, I've been in your shoes. I understand where you're coming from. You need to you need to get more competitive with your price, or you need to not try and sell me the kids off the bus.
Yeah, that's so true. So, yeah, let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and then we will talk a little bit about how to get the best out of the IT staff that you have internally. So please stay tuned.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix, the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional, positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Informative, entertaining, and educational talk. www.voiceamerica.com. Come find out what you've been missing.
Do you want practical business talk radio that thinks outside of the box? Then you need to tune in every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time to Business Out of the Box with Margot Maddock-Murphy. Margot will tackle many different aspects of the business world, from building and reclaiming your profit to improving communication and breakthrough thinking, with great opportunity to call in with your questions or new business ideas. Your host, Margot Maddock-Murphy, is a veteran in business deployment and profit building with companies such as AT&T and Johnson & Johnson. Her business experience spans the globe, working with over 40 countries and in 11 industries. Margot, her guests, and callers are truly your airtime business solution finder. So don't miss your chance to keep the profit in your pocket and get out of the box every Wednesday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time. Once again, that's Business Out of the Box, right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business perspective.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com on the SurfNet Radio Network, brought to you by SurfNet Media Group, publicly traded under the symbol SFNN.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com, the leader in live business talk radio.
Welcome back to Managing Technology the Right Way with Sun Jogal, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. Call in with your questions at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is building a lean IT organization, and our guest for today's show is Jim Hinkamp. Jim is the Vice President and CIO for Shock, Inc., a global prepress house with customers including Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Microsoft, Kellogg's, and Coca-Cola. Additionally, he is also the President of Interchange Digital, a digital asset management solutions company. Interchange Digital is a wholly owned subsidiary of Shock, Inc. Before the break, I briefly mentioned about a situation where, you know, or basically this should be the norm, where whenever you are a CIO, the goal is to get the best out of your IT staff and keep it as small as possible and keep the costs as low as possible. So what's happening in your case?
Yeah, I really, when I came in, the staff was nearly non-existent. It was a very, very small staff, and everybody out in the locations in this, and they really had their own, and other than financials and a little bit of email help, even that was decentralized. There really was a very small staff that really just supported corporate. And when I went through, part of what I did before I came in to be CIO was I went through and did kind of an audit of where is their technology and where is it should be going. And what I really found was that each of our locations, a lot of them were spending a lot of duplicate money on consulting, bringing in consultants to the outside to help them do things in each of their facilities. So they were really spending a lot and duplicating a lot of it. So what I presented to management was to beef up our corporate staff so that we could help them and not have to bring in consultants constantly. So what I've done is I've gone through is I've really gone out and looked for strong people, top leaders, who can come in and help us and be viewed by our different locations as people who can help them. And we've taken the, from my point of view, I still have my consulting hat on, where I really tried to drive home to the people within my organization that there truly are consultants out to our locations, that while there are some things that like security and virus protection, some of those things which we drive through because we have to be able to protect the health of our company, there are a lot of other areas that where if we are not doing the best, they can kind of go out and get assistance on their own. They're fairly independent facilities still, but not complete. So we're really in the mode of selling. We know what we're doing, and the only way we can do that is to have very strong people. So I have some top level people, and then I believe in bringing people in from the bottom, so to say, college graduates, etc., kids who want to come in, learn. They're hungry to grow, and we bring them in by coming through our help desk. So they begin to answer questions, know what types of things come from the field. And we don't have a very large help desk, and we don't get a constant flow of questions. So what they're doing in their off time is they're learning from they're focusing on one of our focus groups, our technical focus groups, to grow into to help them. So that's how I kind of backfill. Like, there, I've got an expert, and then I want to bring people in to backfill so that when my top-level person goes on vacation, I've got somebody there who can still answer the questions.
Now, I remember one of the shows we had a guest who was, of course, a CIO, and he had a mantra that he followed, which said that, you know, every year the amount of efficiency and effectiveness of his IT organization should increase and the budget should decrease. Now, is that... I mean, if he was able to carry it out, hats off to him. But do you think something like that is the right way to approach it? And what are your thoughts about this approach?
Well, I think that really depends on where you're starting from. We had such a small staff to start from that reality, if I did that, I would be at zero. So I could truly outsource completely. I know from going to a lot of companies I've worked at, I could see very easily how that could be. I mean, a lot of places I've been at where there are people who they're doing nearly nothing on a daily basis. I just don't understand how the companies do that. I would say I certainly am viewed as somebody who evaluates people very tough but fair. I would say one of the other things was that there was not a whole lot of people who were let go here prior to my coming in, and I've done a fair share of that. I've evaluated people, and if they're not up to where they need to be, if they're not growing, then we put a plan in place to make sure that they either come up to speed or they move on. I definitely have done my fair share of letting people go. And I think that's something where people do, the stronger people do appreciate that too. So it works two ways. I think some people who are not maybe up to speed realize they need to come up to speed and really need to get going, or else, you know, there things will happen. Whereas the strong people really appreciate that. They appreciate the fact that that if everybody's not pulling their weight, that things that things will happen. I think strong people appreciate that. So I'm constantly looking at how to reduce costs, but also constantly looking at how to provide more value for the company. I think the value is a real key there. It's not just what is your dollar, but what are you doing, and what is the overall value to the company.
That's wonderful. Now, this is the first time I've come across, a dual role where a CIO is playing is also like you're doing, where you're also the president of one of the divisions, and that it's a separate with a separate P&L responsibility. How is that dual role helping you, and where does it backfire?
Yeah, how it helps me is I'm actually able to borrow resources and actually able to keep staff a little leaner, because there are times when their expertise is in each group. With my shock hat on, we really do not have much of a development staff at all. We do in little areas, and then we outsource some of the development to India. But my main development staff then, my interchange side, where they really are developing software, we're able to borrow back and forth. So if I need a networking expert, I can borrow it from Shock, and I'm able to do that without a lot of overhead. I just tell people, need to cooperate, spend a couple hours, you can't abuse the other, but I'm able to borrow resources, and that really helps me to keep the staff lean. And even it goes as far as to policies, procedures, development life cycle documents, which we produce. All those stuff we're able to borrow back and forth. And certainly that's come, the paperwork side, that's come really well to help with our whole Sarbanes-Oxley stuff now, where you've got to have this tons of written paperwork and procedures for everything. But the leveraging the staff definitely does help, as well as, I'm able to offer to my staff some diversity. So I can tell them, if you're going to get tired of doing X over here, think about what you might do in the other part of the company. And I'm able to work with people to be sure they understand that there are different career paths that they can go down. On the interchange side, also with my just sales side on of that, it also helps in that with Schock being working at so many large Fortune 500 consumer packaging and pharmaceutical companies, that they're able to open the doors to my sales, to my interchange sales staff, that they can come in and help them understand. And really it kind of all goes together. So on the IT side, people, I'm able to share resources. On the sales side, one's able to help the other too. So it really is very mutually beneficial.
That's great. Now, I have also seen one model which is being very successfully carried out by an organization and which actually won an award, is that they picked up their own IT organization and converted that into a separate organization which used to actually act as a vendor to the main organization and also compete with other potential vendors who could provide IT. So literally you are putting these guys under the gun to make sure that each person within the organization, as well as the leaders within that IT organization, are hard pressed to make sure that they deliver in the best cost and best and they create the best value, basically. So do you think such an approach could work for you?
I think what we're able to do is constantly be looking at how do we best get the cost as low as possible. We're able to continuously look at, and I continually do we outsource particular options? Do we look at when to do stuff is best? And definitely to me it's a matter of what is the best value overall? Do we outsource things? Do we use our internal people? Or just what is the best way to go about it?
Great. Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and let's talk about the issue where we are having where, I mean, it's not an issue. It's a business model that Interchange Digital has and Schock has, where there is more volume of data that is being handled versus the business rules processing. And what is the related challenge or the related challenges that we are facing in terms of IT and how are they being handled? So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Today, college graduates average 75 to 110% more income than non-graduates. But if you don't have time to go to college, let the college come to you via the Internet. At University of Phoenix Online, you can earn your degree when and wherever you want in just 2 to 3 years. University of Phoenix is the largest private accredited university in the U.S. We offer degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. Call University of Phoenix Online at 1-800-797-3011.
Looking for ways to improve your IT department? Then visit www.avval.com today. Aval is a professional services firm with a mission to help companies align IT with their business objectives through strategy, technology, branding solutions, and services. Our commitment is to ensure bottom-line improvements as a result of services rendered by us. Whether it's an IT needs assessment, strategy development, or related implementation, we back it up by our unconditional positive ROI guarantee. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, making IT work and look better. www.avval.com. Visit today.
Are you looking for a unique perspective on today's market from an experienced economist? Well, look no further. Listen to The Economic Contrarian with host Mike Norman every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on Business America Radio. Mike and his guests will discuss new trends in the marketplace, as well as emerging companies and opportunities. So if you want in-depth analysis from a contrarian point of view, don't miss The Economic Contrarian Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You're listening to BusinessAmericaRadio.com on the SurfNet Radio Network, brought to you by SurfNet Media Group, publicly traded under the symbol SFNM. BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
Rule number one when investing, always have a strategy. Rule number two, listen to Strategies for Enlightened Investors with Jim Whitten and Lance Alston. Heard every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Strategies for Enlightened Investors will expose investment myths that just aren't true and let you know about financial planning strategies for your future. Become an enlightened investor every Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com. Talk radio with a business.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is BusinessAmericaRadio.com.
You are listening to Managing Technology the Right Way, brought to you by the University of Phoenix Online. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free at 1-866-233-7861. Now back to the show. Here's Sun Jogal.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who just tuned in, today's topic is building a lean IT organization, and our guest for today's show is Jim Hainkamp. Jim is the Vice President and CIO for Schawk, Inc., a global prepress house with customers including Procter & Gamble, Walmart, Microsoft, Kellogg's, and Coca-Cola. Additionally, he's also the President of Interchange Digital, a digital asset management solutions company. Interchange Digital is a wholly owned subsidiary of Schawk, Inc. Before the break, we briefly discussed about, or actually I'd asked a question which we'll be discussing right now, was that whether it is Schawk or Interchange Digital, both organizations must be dealing with a large volume of data while intricate business rule processing seems to be minimal. So what are the related challenges? What's the environment that supports this, and how are you dealing with such challenges?
Yeah, I would say one of the uniquenesses here of the large volume of data is really it's our production. And there, it has to do mostly with the size of the digital files which we make, which we then send out to printers or to our clients, et cetera. Here at corporate, our volume isn't huge. I would say it's mostly, especially on our financial system side, our email is probably larger. One of the things about our email systems is actually that's how we send information for the production oftentimes to our clients, and they'll send information to us is via email. And again, those are coming in large files, which many companies don't even allow files of that size through. So certainly there's a challenge on our email side of bringing all that in and backing it up, et cetera. But then the other part becomes in each of our locations, they each have a terabyte or so or more of data, and that's all their production work. So it's very critical, obviously, that they keep that. And how do we keep that backed up? We use a third-party company that comes in, which we have sourced as a corporate whole, that comes in and picks up their tapes every day and be sure that they can, so that from a disaster recovery business continuity standpoint, we can be back up within 48 hours. And we've had to make sure that we can take that data, and how do we restore that data to get any of our facilities back up? Because if we can't get the data back, that's really what the people work on day in and day out. So it becomes very critical that the files that we have, again, that's really our production. So how do we store those? And the speed with which we can download them. You know, some of the stuff that we've talked to other companies about is when you're transactional data, you can just replicate the change bits or whatever. But since we're dealing with a file that could be 100 megabyte large and somebody could change a little bit on it, when it gets written back to the server, it actually looks like the entire file chain. So if we were going to replicate to an off-site facility, we would be having to send huge files off-site again. So it's definitely a lot different here than where I've worked at other places, where mainly the databases they're very large because the transactions are very large, but the transactions are small. So here, very large files, and we deal with them. It's considerably different. And reality is, at each of our locations, they need to worry about the backup and distribution of, and how do we replicate that as well as get that back up to speed from each location.
So basically, you are having a trusted network, networks for each location. You know, basically, they have a trusting relationship between each other, and then. And that way, you know, you're again the single point of failure issue is removed.
Right. I mean, we have each location. From our disaster recovery standpoint, we've identified that which location would fall over to another location. So if something happened where one and they had to shut down, we could then go to another location and restore their files on the servers at that one, and then they could be up and running and be able to do their production work at another facility. They don't transmit the files on a normal. We do have a global VPN, which we use for all of our telecom, but they don't transmit the files. Because, again, they're large files, and it would require a huge telecom cost. But so we do rely on tape backup, and we do have a third party come in and you know ship those off to their safe facility.
And when it comes down to the business rules side of it, which anyway is minimal, so you are okay with the way it's being handled, and maybe the centralization of any such data would actually be beneficial.
We continue to look at the centralization for allowing customers to come in and get information about the work that's being done. So maybe not transmitting the files themselves, but transmitting information about the physical job that's being done, and where is the status of the job, and what information like that, even you know invoices and payment schedules and any information like that we've looked at giving out to our clients. So for that, we'd have to centralize that information. But the actual files themselves, the large production files, we've looked at centralizing, but the cost factor with the telecom just does not make sense, and we continue to do that.
So your past experience actually includes large software implementations. How is that experience any different from what you're facing right now?
You know, the difference is that when we did the large implementations, usually we go in with a team of people who were very experienced, and as well as most of the time there were large corporate staff. And our corporate building is very lean, and there's very, even on the management side, most of the people who are work for the company are actually out in the different physical locations. So our corporate staff has some HR, the high-level executive management team, very small executive management team, as well as some salespeople, Interchange Digital's here, and our small IT staff. So I would say most companies, when they used to do large implementations, we'd go in with a decent-sized team. There would be dedicated staff from the client side out of their corporate buildings, and we'd be able to have a fairly good team that would really be able to focus on this. All of the since the people aren't here, we're having to do a lot more conference calls, a lot more virtual teams. So that definitely adds some complexities to getting projects done, et cetera. Everybody is very, works together well, but the other part is since they're out in the field, their day-to-day comes first, which is serving the clients and et cetera, and without having a dedicated team here, it definitely adds to some of the stress about making our timelines and getting people's attentions when they're focused on their day-to-day jobs.
So let's quickly talk about this outsourcing of your IT development. You mentioned that you are sending some work to India. Now, it's an emotional issue for many companies, and in fact, many organizations have been badly burned, so the rest are skeptical. Has that helped you, and in what form, and what are the good and bad things that you've seen about it?
Yeah, we've been trying to step toe into it to figure out how does this work. So we've taken some non-critical system development and begun things that we wanted to do, but didn't really, like I say, I don't really have a development team within my corporate side. So we've taken some applications and tried to get them to help to build us up. It's really where we're trying to build the central warehouse. And the first company we work with didn't work out very well, and simply because there were two parts. One was communications as well as cultural. And, you know, the cultural part was they really wouldn't push back on us at all and tell us we shouldn't do things. We'd throw ideas out to them. And I'm used to people here in the States when you bring in consultants or bring anybody in that you're constantly able to throw out ideas and this is, what do you think about this? And we got very little interaction with the people in India on the other side. So I knew it wasn't working out. It didn't cost a whole lot of money, but on the other hand, it took a lot longer to get the applications done than we had hoped. Since they weren't on critical, it wasn't too bad. We then began to take another application, which we had, which was mostly done. We wanted to convert it from one language, from .NET into Java, because we're pretty standard on Java, and it had been developed by one of our locations. And we gave that to another company and asked them to redevelop it to see how would we work with them. Were they able to fill in the gaps that the other company wasn't? And they was able to. So we've been able to work well with them. Again, they've been a smaller company. You know, it's like here in the U.S., you could go to an Accenture for development, but if you're not having going to have a large team of people from one of the big consulting firms, you're probably going to get lost in it. And the same thing with companies in India. There are large companies over there that if you go with, you're not going to be a predominant client with them, so the likelihood of you getting their best is not as high as where if you stay with a medium-sized firm from India, that it you're more likely to be satisfied. But, you know, it's so much a matter of who you get on your team. You know, I had, when we were dealing with the former firm, there was the person, the project manager was really very good, but the team seemed to be the ones that were just not quite as strong as what I was looking for.
Great. On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would like to thank you, Jim, for sharing your experience and insights about how to make a lean IT organization.
Okay, it's been great. I'm able to share my views, and hopefully I've been some help to someone.
Thanks again. With unique challenges related to handling large data volumes, decentralized IT, and global operations, it sure becomes a daunting task to keep IT support organization lean. You sure can use outsourcing IT functions as needed, but be careful and don't over-rely on external sources and keep a critical mass of internal IT resources who understand your business and that knowledge is retained within the company. And you can get the best out of your IT staff by continuously helping them retool themselves through training and have them work on different applications and systems, which keeps their job challenging and keeps them around. So as far as possible, share IT resources across locations and remove redundancy, and this holds true for applications, systems, data, and people. Is your organization pertaining to IT lean? Please send us an email with your thoughts at talkshow.participate@awol.com. That is talkshow.participate@awol.com. Thank you again for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. This is Sanjog Aul, your talk show host. Till next Friday, take care and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Managing Technology the Right Way. Please join Sanjog Aul next Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time right here on BusinessAmericaRadio.com.